Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Chartock of the State University.
Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. This week, ethics legislation agreed to by state lawmakers. We'll hear about a proposal for changes in mandatory auto insurance. And then there's the question of government intrusion into public broadcasting. That's all ahead on the Legislative Gazette. Lawmakers announced on Tuesday that agreement had been reached on all details of conflict of interest and financial disclosure legislation. The rules will apply to all elected state officials, state employees earning more than $30,000 a year, judges, some political party chairmen, and candidates for statewide offices. Lawmakers would face new restrictions in representing law clients before state agencies, and they would have to list financial assets, including stock holdings and outside income. In addition, the package sets up an auditing system for the legislature, executive, and judicial branches of state government in hopes that it would provide better control on how the government spends public money. We talked about details of the bills with Fred Dicker of the New York Post. Fred Dicker of the New York Post, you're now holding in your hand perhaps the most comprehensive piece of ethics legislation to ever pass in New York State. Are there any holes in it, Fred?
Well, Alan, you know, in normal procedure for the legislature, this thing is 137 pages long. They just handed it to us late in the week. We probably don't have more than just a few hours to take a look at it carefully to see if there are holes in it. And we're not, obviously, you and me as journalists, trained lawyers in reading this stuff. There are some minor holes that I've been able to see so far. But on balance, it looks like a pretty sweeping measure.
Okay, there are a couple of things that I think we ought to take a look at. Number one, in the bill itself is the question of who will do the enforcing.
Yes.
Now, if you break a law in New York State, the prosecutor at will can come after you, but apparently
right.
Not in this bill.
Well, you're absolutely correct, Alan, and I'm sure that's one of the loopholes that are going to be focused on by critics. Under this bill, if a state legislator or if a legislative employee intentionally misrepresents, falsely reports either income or a lack of income that should have been reported by law, then a panel that is going to be named by the legislature itself will decide whether to slap them on the hand and give them a civil penalty or refer it to a district attorney for criminal prosecution. But it's just within the discretion of this legislative appointed panel. So many here are going to be saying, as they already are, this is sort of kid gloves treatment, that if you or me, the average citizen, falsely files information with the state, you and I would get nailed, especially you. But here they're treating themselves separately. It's a loophole, but I think the governor would say, and he's probably right, that this is the best he could do.
So, Fred, if in fact all of this fighting between the governor and the legislature has involved the fact that there'll be criminal penalties or not criminal penalties, and now we find out that there is this idea that the legislature itself, which historically has always banded the wagons and circled the wagons at the right moment to protect their members, is going to make the decision as to whether to recommend prosecution.
Right.
Isn't this without merit then?
No, I don't think so. Look, it went from no criminal penalties to maybe criminal penalties. Now, that's a weakness in it. There's no question. But there are page after page after page of disclosure requirements, the likes of which have never been seen in New York, and I think most of the lawmakers will abide by them. And it's going to provide us in the media, and then the public as a result, a more accurate and closer look at the financial entanglements and involvements of the elected officials in this state than ever before. And I think that's probably something to be glad for, to be justifiably pleased with.
Now, Fred, the rest of it, is this, well, first of all, I have heard from senior people around
yes.
that one of the reasons that so many people have been included in this bill, virtually thousands of state workers, anybody who earns more than $30,000.
Right, that's about 60 to 70,000 state workers.
That's a lot of people, is to include so much hoopla and so much bureaucracy that the legislature will be able to say the thing is unwieldy or
yes.
doesn't work or costs too much.
Well, I've heard that too, and as a result, Alan, and you know, we both talked about this when the first loophole riddled bill was passed in April. which had this kind of a proviso in it. I've asked, and they tell me that's no longer so. That, in fact, there's a provision in the bill now, and I haven't found it yet, but I was told this by Evan Davis, who's the governor's chief counsel, that there's a provision in the bill that will allow the unions or individuals to come forward and request exemptions for people or classes of employees. The unions will be effective there, who make $30,000 or more but are not in policy-making positions, like university professors, for instance. So
thank
that in
God.
Fact, thank God. So in fact, according, if Davis is correct, there will be sweeping exemptions, which over a year or two will whittle down the number of people required to disclose to a more manageable number.
Fred, one other thing. There is a companion piece that will either be included in this piece of legislation or not,
yes.
Which essentially is the auditing bill.
Now, so-called.
Yes, the so-called auditing
Governor
bill.
Governor says it's very important. It's designed to allow either outside auditors or the state comptroller to come in and take a look at how the legislature and certain executive branches spend their money. I think most of our citizens probably assumed that was now being done anyway. It's not. And the governor says it's important. There's some reason to believe it is. The future of the bill is not clear right now. The governor thinks he's going to get it, and he's hinted that the pay raises that we both know that the legislators want so much are contingent on their approving this measure. Right now, it looks like it has a good chance, but we won't know for several hours.
Well, the interesting thing about that bill is it seems to me in some cases it calls for independent, paid major auditing firms to do this work. Is that specifically what the controller of the state of New York was established to do?
Not specifically when it came to the legislature itself. The controller was keeping the state's books and overseeing the state's revenues. But since the legislature was a separate branch of government, technically the controller is in the executive branch of government. Since the legislature is a separate and distinct branch, the controller has been wary of looking at their books. And let's be realistic about it, Alan. The controller's been wary, too, because the legislature controls the state controller's budget every year. And if the controller did a little number, found some inappropriate things in the legislature might retaliate. When you have a law that says the state controller shall, which in legalese means must, do something, it eliminates or it certainly ameliorates the concern that there will be legislative retaliation against the controller.
Fred, last thing. Big win for Governor Cuomo?
I think it is. And if we're not sure that it is, over the next few weeks, I'm sure we're going to hear him say it 100 times. So he knows how to take polenta and make it into filet mignon when he wants to.
The always incisive Fred Dicker of the New York Post.
This is the Legislative Gazette, and I'm Leslie Brokaw. Lawmakers were expressing relief this week that the legislation on disclosure and conflict of interest finally was in the bag. Most said that it was past time and that the bill might help restore public faith in the system. Some, however, expressed reservation about parts of the bill. Assemblyman John Faso is a Republican from Hudson, New York.
Points of contention I have with the legislation are not the ones that anyone has been reading about. For instance, let me give you one example. In the Capital District here, this is going to be particularly interesting to see how it works. The bill says that any state employee making over $30,000 is required to file this form. Well, it's going to mean that over 60,000 forms are going to be filed. And I just wonder whether or not that's a bit of overkill. I would have preferred that the salary level for state workers be something somewhat higher, say $50,000. That would have made it, I think, a little more meaningful. There's another thing about the legislation too, which is not addressed, and that is the question of emancipated children, siblings, and even parents of state officials, statewide elected officials, and legislators can also, by the nature of their relationship, have a fair amount of influence in the operations of state government. And while the and this bill does not address that question at all.
Assemblyman John Faso of Hudson, New York. Alan Chartok spoke about the ethics bill with Stan Lundeen, New York's lieutenant governor, who said that this was an historic piece of legislation.
First of all, congratulations. You guys really did get a tremendous victory here. But is there a loophole that we have to look at here, and that is in the way in which this whole thing is going to be enforced? Now, as you remember, the whole fight during this session was whether there would be criminal penalties attached if legislators didn't adhere to this code of ethics that was being brought forth in this bill. Now we're hearing that the legislature itself will police itself, and that prosecutors will not be able to prosecute for not adhering to the code unless the charge is forwarded from the legislature to the prosecutor. Somehow, isn't that the old fox guarding the hen house?
Well, perhaps it is, but I think that's common to most legislatures in the country, and it is the case with the Congress. Here, I think we have a joint legislative committee involving both the Assembly and the Senate. You know, we've never been able to achieve that in Washington. It is true that the Legislative Commission on Ethics would review a violation and then decide either to impose a fine up to $10,000 themselves, or it would be their decision to refer it to a prosecutor, and a prosecutor couldn't take action for violation of the disclosure provisions of the of a legislator unless it was referred to him.
What about the other side? What about the other violations other than disclosure?
Well, right now we have none of these requirements on the legislature, and I think that it's a breakthrough that we get them. The requirements in this law will be reviewed as to the legislature, will be reviewed by the Legislative Joint Commission. As to the executive branch, it'll be reviewed by an ethics commission. And I think that there is a degree of independence here we've never had before, and a consistency with what the best ethical requirements in other states and in the national government provide.
Now, there is a second commission that is being appointed by the governor that will have something to do with the legislature. Do you understand what that does?
Well, the commission appointed by the governor apparently works in parallel with the legislative commission, basically reviewing the executive branch. So they do similar functions, one for the executive branch and one for the legislature.
Will you be looking for more than this next year, Stan? Or is
this this is not the end of the battle for integrity in government in New York State. We hope we'll not only get an ethics law, but also an audit and guidelines law, so that the taxpayers know that there's going to be some review of all the functions of government, the courts, the legislature, and everything with regard to no-show employees and a lot of the other violations that have been going on. I think that'll be an enormous accomplishment this year. But there's a lot of other ethical questions that require review, including how we finance political campaigns and what the limits on campaign contributions ought to be and that kind of thing. The FERC Commission that is established under the Moreland Act and the Blue Ribbon Commission that the legislature adopted, that's headed up by former Governor Malcolm Wilson, I think both should take a look at these other ethical issues. I don't think we're done with the question of integrity in New York State government, but I think we've achieved a significant accomplishment.
One thing, Stan, and that is the question of practice before courts. Now, this bill would specifically exclude legislators from appearing before state agencies representing private legal clients, but they can still go to state courts. Isn't that the same thing?
No, I don't think so. We really have a pretty independent judiciary, and I don't see anything wrong with a legislator, a lawyer practicing before in the Supreme Court of New York State.
Well, let me argue with you about that for a second. It seems to me that the theory of the practice before state agencies was that the state agency heads would not feel compelled to allow this, quote, lawyer who was also a legislator special privileges because he was a legislator. Now, that's because he votes on their salaries. That's because he votes on their bills. The same thing is true with the legislator and the Supreme Court justice.
Not in the same direct way. If a lawyer legislator is a chairman of a committee that regulates, let's say, banks, because I don't think either of those chairmen are lawyers, but practicing lawyers. But at any rate, if they regulate banks, and then they go in and represent a bank before the banking superintendent.
Well, that's bad news.
That's pretty obvious.
Well, what
I
if
think.
The guy's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which votes on all kinds of things having to do with the state courts, and then represents a client before a judge?
There are so many judges in the state that I think that is a very distinguishable situation, and it is highly unlikely that that judge would feel intimidated. He personally is only indirectly affected by the legislative decisions that that lawyer-legislator makes as a legislator, and I don't think there is the potential for abuse that there is in the regulated agency situation.
Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. There's been a move on this legislative session to pass a new auto insurance bill. Right now, car owners are required to carry insurance that would pay $10,000 to a single person injured in an accident with that car and $20,000 for injury to more than one person. Many people already choose to carry more coverage, but some lawmakers say that the required minimum ought to be raised as protection from those lesser insured drivers. A bill sponsored by Eugene Levy in the Senate and Helene Weinstein in the Assembly would raise those minimums from $10,000, $20,000 to $30,000 and $60,000. Among the groups advocating the bill this session has been the Alliance for Consumer Rights, the public relations arm of the New York Trial Lawyers. Rick Schrader is their director.
Rates have not been changed since 1957. Really, it's an economy frozen in time over 30 years. And what this will do will rebalance this particular piece of economics. The consumer price index has tripled since the late 50s, and we just want to get things up to where they would be ordinarily.
Now, there will be those cynical people out there, Rick, who are going to say to you, wait a second, this guy says he's from the Alliance for Consumer Rights, but then he tells us it's an arm of the lawyers, the trial lawyers. Now he says he's here, like the government, to help us, but what he wants us to do is to raise the basic amounts that people are covered for in insurance. And what he really wants to do here is to raise the amounts of money that people will have on hand in settlement so that the lawyers can get their hands on their share of it.
Unquestionably, the lawyers will be able to get a higher they'll get the same percentage but a higher piece. If they're only getting $10,000 now, lawyers would get between a fifth and a third of that. This is not a lot of money. We're not going to talk about the trial lawyers throughout New York State wanting to fight vociferously for a bill, and it's been a vicious fight this session, that they're going to get maybe $10,000, $12,000 per firm increase in their overall firm. Right now, if they get $3,000 out of a $10,000 settlement, they may get, what, $9,000 out of a $30,000? Yep. That's all shared by partners. Mm-hmm. It's not a big money item for the trial lawyers. What it really is, though, it's an attempt on the part of a lot of consumer organizations, a lot of other groups. We're having a fairly broad-range coalition, including the Automobile Club, Citizen Action, and NYPIRG, as well as organizations like the Communication Workers and the Patrolman's Benevolent Association. We're finding that the insurance issue was raised last year and heightened people's consciousness about insurance generally as a kind of organic economic impulse, as opposed to just simply something once in a while you buy for your house or your car. Because of that, people with auto insurance began to look at the insurance issue in a more political way and see insurance as something which they have a sense of rights towards.
Well, it isn't people who are starting all this. It's you guys. It's the trial lawyers, right?
No, it's not our bill, though. I mean, the bill was raised by a number of other organizations. Mm-hmm. Again, the Automobile Club was key in some of this. The trial lawyers certainly have been, though, a major political engine as far as the overall political struggle this year. But it's a piece, I think, of a longer and broader consumer tradition. And in this case, it's certainly an issue that affects victims, too. The issue here is that someone hurt in a reckless driving incident is only going to get $10,000. And if they're a child, that's the terrible hypothetical, if they're a child and they could, for the rest of their life, get no more than the $50,000 under no fault and the $10,000 under this coverage.
Well, why would that be? In other words, I could sue you. You might not have that kind of coverage, but if you had the money or if you had the resources or the court could garnish or attach a salary, right? I mean, it's not limited to what I can win from the insurance coverage.
Generally speaking, though, the people who have 10-20 are people who are judgment-proof. They don't have anything you can really sue for. Mm-hmm. Many times they don't even have homes. So we're talking about people who are not deep pockets and they don't have resources that you could fall back on.
Who's the enemy in this? Is the insurance companies against us?
It's very interesting. The enemy is out there and it is us. The insurance industry is not visible in opposition. In some cases, they're supportive. The insurance agents of New York, for example, have been very supportive and wrote a memo in support to Senate Majority Leader Warren Anderson. We're not finding the insurance carriers being very visible on this. The only people we see, the only person we see, I should say, in direct opposition to it is Senator Joseph Bruno, who's the chair of the Insurance Committee, a very, very tough opposition. He can kill the bill.
Well, why is he opposed?
He argues that people in the assigned risk categories, people with bad driving records or young drivers, they're going to see their rates skyrocket. The State Insurance Department thinks differently. The State Insurance Department and the Cuomo administration and Richie Kessel from the Consumer Protection Board suggest that the increases for the assigned risk, which would be the highest placed on any drivers in the state, would be under 10%, probably more like 5% increase.
Mm-hmm. So bottom line in all of this, what's the chances that this bill will pass this year? Not very good.
I think that we need to allow the bill to get onto the Senate floor. If we're to get on the Senate floor, I could say uncategorically we'd have about 50 votes for it. Mm-hmm. But without getting out of the Insurance Committee, clearly there's no chance. It's being squelched there. Oftentimes the state Senate's the place, the elephant's graveyard of reasonably forward-looking legislation, and it's no different this time around.
Rick Schrader is executive director of the Trial Lawyers Group, Alliance for Consumer Rights. Meanwhile, the Senate sponsor of the bill, Eugene Levy, has gone over the head of the Senate Insurance Chairman Joe Bruno in petitioning the legislative leadership to bring the issue directly to the floor. The bill already has passed the Assembly. Leslie Brokaw spoke with Senator Bruno about why he's held up the bill in committee.
Well, because I have a great concern that the cost of insurance for cars is already too high for the people of New York, and if this bill passes, it could very well double the cost of insurance for cars for a lot of people. That's my major concern. That's why we're being very cautious and very careful, and that's why we're continually exploring the ramifications of this bill.
Some people have said that the hike in the cost, that this is the key issue, that you say that it would be doubling some people's bills. Others say that it would be adding as much as $100, but maybe only 5 to 10%. Where do you come up with your numbers?
Well, I'd like to know where they come up with theirs. The trial lawyers, who are the greatest beneficiaries of raising the limits because they would, get higher fees for representing people in lawsuits, they come up with 5 or 8%. I think that's nonsense. And that's the reason, again, why we're being very careful as we move forward. And I expect I may be having hearings on this subject before we take any definitive action. I'm just being careful, that's all, because people already pay way too much for their insurance. And I don't think that we ought to, in any irresponsible way, just go ahead and force people to have to buy triple the minimums that they presently have to buy today.
Again, though, where did you get your numbers from?
We have numbers that come from the industry, and we are still collecting information. But what I'm saying is, I don't know for certain. And that's the reason why we're being very careful. But, you know, common sense would tell me that if we force people and the insurers to provide triple the coverage, common sense would tell me that you're going to have to increase the premium in order to give triple the minimum coverage, aren't you? You think you're going to get three times the coverage for the same amount of money or for a few dollars more? I don't think so.
Joe Bruno is state senator from Rensselaer County and chairs the Senate Insurance Committee.
Last month in the Albany area, it became big news to learn that public television and radio station WMHT had a $6 million reserve fund in the bank. State officials say that about a third of the state's public TV stations operate with no reserves, that another third have modest reserves of about $250,000, and that about a third have sizable reserves. But WMHT, with $6 million, has over 1 year's budget set aside. The state official in charge of overseeing public broadcasting says that in the wake of the MHT issue, the state will be considering imposing limitations on the amount of money that can be sitting in the bank at any time. He said two-thirds of the yearly budget is the amount now being discussed. This week on the Capitol Connection, WAMC's interview with Mario Cuomo, the governor said that there is a move afoot by some Republicans to further regulate public broadcasting.
I'd be opposed to any kind of government regulation of WMHT, WAMC, any public television, any commercial television. I agree with the president who repealed the Fairness Doctrine. I disagree with all the Democrats and all the Republicans who voted for the Fairness Doctrine, and they voted overwhelmingly. Now, that's an interesting proposition. With WMHT, I have been one of those who supported, as vigorously as I could, giving money to public television and public radio. I think both are important. I am prepared to do it without any regulation at all. But I can see people being tempted now in the Capital District. I can see Arnold Proskin or Faso saying, hey, they've got that big thing, we ought to regulate them. You know, especially Republicans who regulate public television and public radio very easily because they think it's too liberal. So I think you should look out for the Republicans who will now try to attach to the money they give you conditions.
Governor Cuomo speaking on the Capitol Connection. However, the two Republican assemblymen that Cuomo named, Arnold Proskin and John Faso, say they've never heard of a plan to further regulate public broadcasting.
The governor is obviously confused. I don't know why he's making such rash allegations. They're untrue. He knows them to be untrue, because he just made it up out of thin air. I have to say, the governor is not telling the truth. It's absolutely false.
That was John Faso, and his thoughts are echoed by Assemblyman Arnold Proskin.
I think that the governor is acting in a totally irrational way. I think that if one of my kids were to say something like that, which is a total, absolute fabrication, there's no basis to it, he'd be punished for quite a long period of time. I happen to be a subscriber to WMHT before Mario Cuomo came to Albany. I've been a supporter of public television and public radio. We contribute. I give of myself. And I think what he's doing once again is just totally, absolutely fabricating a statement to perhaps fend off something. I don't know what. I mean, I, as you know, I asked the other day for an independent investigation of the Thruway Authority and for other little fires that really almost rise to the highest unethical, perhaps, and if true, illegal actions within the governor's cabinet, within the administration. And perhaps this is his way of saying, well, I'll point to him and I'll call him names. I'll say he's not he's taking some other position. I think it's terrible that a man who aspires to the presidency, and I think he does, would act this way. What would he do if Gorbachev said something about him that he didn't like? Would he push the button?
Assemblyman Arnold Proskin. Both Proskin and Faso say there are no plans that they know of in either house to further regulate public broadcasting, and Proskin says if there were, he would not be in favor of them.
And that's the Legislative Gazette for this week. Our show is produced by Leslie Brokaw with help from Dan Analek, Dan Brody, Maury Small, and Dave Galletly. We'll be back again next week. For now, I'm Alan Chartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University College at New Paltz.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.